show. We are super excited. We have some great information we are going to cover today. We know a lot of our listeners follow social media and use the social media in order to promote themselves. We have a lot of listeners that come from the speaking world. They're new speakers. They're getting off the ground. They're learning to use their skills and their expertise in speaking to create their own expertise, and they're getting their speaking careers off the ground. And we have a special edition of The Advantage here today. We're going to help these speakers stay ahead of their audiences and dominate their niche. And today we have a very special guest. This man basically wrote the book on Twitter. In fact, he wrote a specific book on Twitter. The book was called Warren, what was the exact name of your book?
Twitter Revolution.
Twitter Revolution. And then he followed up with another awesome book called Profitable Social Media, Business Results Without Playing Games. And he has had incredible success. In fact, Warren is rated the number 9 social media influencer on the internet by Forbes magazine. And that's been several years running now. So welcome to our show, Warren Whitlaw.
Hi, glad to be here. Hope I can help your listeners in some way.
Yes, well, thank you for being here, Warren. And there's so much to talk about because, you know, social media has become the platform for people to get the word out about whatever they're doing. And especially in the speaking world, as you know, you do a lot of speaking yourself, so you know that people, spend so much time putting their expertise together, their knowledge together in a packaged format, and then they start to brand themselves, and then they start to push that information out. And as they push that information out, it's such an important key because you could do all this work, and then if you don't get your audience, if you don't reach your audience, all that work is for naught and all that effort's for naught. So today we're going to talk with Warren Whitlaw about how we can best maximize that media stream, that channel that we have now in this day and age that we've never had before, and it's been building over the last several years. So, Warren, let's start with some basics just so people can get to know you a little bit and where you came from. How did you become so influential in social media?
Oh, that's a great question. It's pretty simple. I'm influential in that I know a lot of people who are influential. It's all about collaboration and working with other people.
Excellent. So I guess you wrote the book on Twitter Revolution in 2008. Were you just starting to build your network then, or had you been building it for several years before that?
Well, there was, when I signed into Twitter, I was just like everybody else. I didn't have any followers, and I wasn't following anybody, and I could see what looked to be a lot of people talking about what they had for breakfast. And I said, what do I care what other people are having for breakfast? And then I saw they had just hooked it up with Facebook. It was the first Facebook app when Facebook became commercial. And I could tie this together with Facebook. I could put out some links. I could generate some traffic, do some SEO. Wow, this be wonderful. And so I started, putting keywords in and links and all that kind of stuff, trying to figure out how to monetize it. Try to push my message better. And that failed miserably, as it does today. And then I started reading the other tweets, and there were people there, real people, who were asking for help, and I knew how to answer questions. And so, I just typed in the answer to the question, and then people go, well, thank you. And, built my network that way, is by helping other people. As soon as I learned to stop trying to push the message, I became attractive enough that somebody would care about what I had to say.
Oh, isn't that funny? It still works today. You add or offer tons of value, and it's so powerful in building yourself, promoting yourself, and building your business. I guess that's still a formula for success.
Well, let's look back at a history, say business since the agricultural era when, most people made food and and if they had surplus, they sold it in a market. And, you know, that's changed somewhat, but basically it's the same thing today. It's food out of the ground, and it's worth more than what it costs to make it, labor-intensive, and, you know, so the economics of that have gone up and down. We need a lot less people to make food now, and we can make a lot more, so it's, you know, larger farms making more money. But basically after that, we went into factories, and that was using a lot of people to generate a lot of things. But in the 20th century, we got into mass production. We had mass assembly lines putting together a lot of the same thing. And Henry Ford had two things. He championed the mass production line. He also championed paying his people well for working there. And later, with the help of unions, they all did very well. And they, you know, it would get a union job and you're set for life. Meanwhile, mass communication became possible. So if you had a big enough printing press and distribution of your newspaper, you could do well with newspaper, magazine, anything like that. And then broadcast really took that over and really pushed things out to where, you know, every home had a TV and radio, and you could pick up the commercially sponsored programs. And if you spend enough money telling your story, people would find out about it. The one thing that was missing, and going back to the way farms worked and everything, everybody did business by talking to each other back in the early days. In broadcasting, you didn't actually talk to the people. You became expert at packaging something to push out. And if you pushed it hard enough, some people would buy it. You know, the modern convenience of a supermarket is like about 100 years old now. And, you know, that meant we're going to put a whole bunch of products from all over the place. We got better preservation and delivery into where, you know, you can get strawberries around whole year round now, and, you know, that sort of thing. And so we just became better and better at pushing stuff through that channel. And we finally reached a point somewhere about 25, 30 years ago where the Internet was good enough that they could allow two-way communication. The only thing that did that before was the telephone. And so you know how we like having a message pushed at us in the telephone. You just love during the dinner hour to have the phone ring and pick it up and listen to somebody's pitch. No one likes that. We never really liked door-to-door salesmen or any kind of thing like that. We came up with some other innovation fairly recently in the 70s, people being able to pay to speak to do, you know, like self-help and individualized content became a bigger and bigger thing. Cabot, Robert, and, you know, Zig Ziglar and some of those guys came along and changed how you did things. You got a bigger group, you spoke to them, and you were able to sell something. Still trying to do that same model, but the Internet turned everything around to where it's just as easy to send a message either direction. We're now used to email. We know it's not real time, but it's close enough. And then from there, we got the web kept getting better and better. And as the equipment got better, following Moore's Law, which can't, you know, you can't deny that's one trend that's going to keep on going. Moore's Law means that computers are going to get twice as fast and half the price every 18 months. And there's some more to it, but I'm kind of like generalizing what it is. And so now we've reached the point where you can get audio, video, whatever you want, right into your phone at a fraction of the cost of what it used to be, and we really can. We can communicate with anybody wherever it is. So the difference is today we expect to be able to give feedback, to talk back to the speaker, author, expert, even the broadcasters, because, you know, those people are available. The stars are on Twitter and the people and authors have blogs. You expect to have that two-way communication. And if you're not taking advantage of that, you're missing out on the majority of what your market can do, because now the people can ask for you directly rather than trying to push through some channel of how many stage gates you can get. Hello?
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, you had mentioned, you and I were talking about every time you read a book, you finish reading a book, you jump on the blog of the author, and the author, you're able to communicate now with the author directly, almost real time, in order to get a deeper understanding of what they're talking about. So it is a two-way communication. It's not immediate, but it does exist.
Right. When I've talked to speaker authors over the last 10, 15 years that I've been doing this, and the you know, and they tell me about what it is they want to do, they expect that if they get the right kind of gig, they're going to speak, people are going to buy a book at the back of the room, maybe the home study course and upsells from that. Done a lot of work with the people who, you know, sell mega packages at the back of the room, and basically put people into a trance that they really like what they came to hear about. They run to the back of the room and they want to buy something. In fact, those guys avoid selling a book because they know they want to get you signed up for the multi-$1,000 program. And in all of that, it was all about how we can control the whole audience at a time. And now try going to a place where there's a, you know, 500 or more people in the room and be able to be able to get everybody to turn off their cell phone and pay attention at the same time. No, everybody's got a smartphone. Everybody's doing multiple things. And now that memorizing, and it really doesn't matter whether you're selling something in the back of the room or just selling yourself. A motivational speaker is trying to get them fired up. They're not going to get very much fired up if they're checking Facebook the whole time you're talking. And so now you need a way to actually take advantage of the fact that they're very vocal. They want to talk. They want to share. And so I start off every speech I do by telling people, turn your phones on. Because there's something, you know, if I'm not entertaining you enough to keep your attention, that's my problem. But what I want is if you're going to talk to somebody, tell them how great it is here. Because for every person sitting in the room, there's probably 10 that would wanted to be there. And there's at least two or three that wanted to be there. And then when you start multiplying how many would want to be there if they knew about it, that's huge. And so, and that's two-way communication because we've got people talking to their friends saying, yeah, I'm here, this is what I'm doing, I'm having a good time. And then for the most part, I do my best to make sure that it's difficult for them to spend the whole time on Facebook because they're listening and paying attention to what's being presented.
Right. Well,
and
that's real engagement. Right. Exactly. And that's taking the media and spinning it around and using it for yourself, where everybody else is saying, hey, let's shut off your cell phones and give some respect to the speaker. And you're saying, no, let's turn on your cell phones and let's start tweeting out and posting on Facebook what's going on in this event and maybe engage a wider audience than what you're speaking.
Right, and it depends on the event. I talked last year to a group. It was only 60 people, but they happened to be health IT marketing executives. Okay, these are people who are very much well-wired. Some of the great big companies with CMOs and you know, staff there, they hardly get involved in anything doing it themselves. But these were people that were in a small enough company or a low enough position that they were on all day long. All of them had Hootsuite and Twitter, Facebook, whatnot, all hooked up and ready to do something. And literally, I got done with an hour speech and spent 2 hours answering the tweets and just loved it because these are people I established a relationship with. They now follow me on Twitter. We're more or less friends. The definition of friends has been, you know, exploded and beat up over what Facebook has done to it. They're not, you know, they're not real life friends, but they're friends. They're friendly. We have a mutually nice civil relationship for future business. I knew I couldn't sell anything to the people. I was there to teach them about social media. Well, they knew about social media, and that group was wired, ready to go, and we did some damage talking about things and sharing with other people and letting the world know about the message. And so they loved it. And now I go to another group where nobody is doing this, say, you know, a group of professionals, attorneys, accountants, things like that. I talked to a group like that. Well, then it was a little bit more traditional. I kept them interested. I told them what they could do. That one's right after that, so I compared the two. The slides didn't work, so it was just me talking in front of a group of about 50 people. And at the end of it, everybody wanted to come up and talk to me and tell me that they didn't want to ask in the question and answer period because they were embarrassed how bad they were at their own social media. And so that was great for leads. Didn't happen to be the kind I was looking for, but there was all sorts of people who was interested in it. And then there's the you know, and then there's the idea of if you're really getting just paid to speak and then disappear, which, you know, that's a nice gig if you can get it. You spend your hour, 90 minutes on stage, and you're done. If you're doing that, you still want all the people in the room to be telling everybody, giving great reviews and wanting you to come back. Well,
Right.
First of all, if you start off by trying to get them to shut off their cell phone or yell at them for using the technology, a ringer goes off and it's a problem, you know, you're kind of like, you know, you're fighting the audience at this point. 10
right.
years ago,
right.
you could. You definitely could. 5 years ago, happened all the time. But today, I wouldn't dare tell them to. And I think everybody's smart enough to silence their cell phone. Maybe not, because every time I go to the movies, they tell us 10 times to silence the cell phone.
Yeah.
And I always check mine, and it's already turned off. I'm always on
right.
vibrate.
Right, right. Well, we deal with a lot of speakers. We work with a lot of speakers. We nurture them. They're just getting started. And I know they know about Facebook because they're using it socially, but they're not using it for business yet. And I know they know about YouTube. Some of them have stuff posted, but they're not really using it for business yet. And almost none mm-hmm. of them are using Twitter. So what I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit about, first, what is Twitter, and then how is that used, and then how is Facebook and YouTube also being used today to basically promote people like the our group, our community of speakers and thought leaders.
Well, if you're,
so let's start
if
with
you want to run ads, they all have advertising mm-hmm. available. So you can run a pre-roll ad on YouTube. You can, mm-hmm. you know, pay for traffic on Facebook to look at your page. And on Twitter, you mm-hmm. can do the same thing. If you
right.
think you found some magic way to go out and put your ad up for free and people are going to want to read it, you know, that's like going to church and trying to sell sausage, you know. You're in the inappropriate place. So the difference is today you want people to be looking for you. And if you've got a following, they're looking for you. If you've given a speech, it's good, then the people naturally today want to know more about you, want to talk to you, and it's a matter of how well you're listening. If you don't have a big following, if you haven't, you know, spoke to millions of people, then you can still find those same people, the people that you're trying to reach. Not necessarily, we'll get to getting gigs in a minute, but just the people that will mm-hmm. be in an audience of any place you go to speak. Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
They are on Facebook. Last week, Facebook announced there was over a billion people on in one day. And so, you know, just assume they're on Facebook. That's what's different from the farm days. You know, it used to be you did business with people you could shake their hand and look them in the eye. And, you know, that was one of the great things about the agrarian economy was, you know, farmer could go meet somebody. Even if you went into the general store, I always think of the Green Acres show with the Hooterville General Store. And Sam
right.
Brooker would be there and you know, he'd trust you. You didn't worry about whether he paid for it or you had credit or did what, because he knew you weren't going to try to steal something. No shoplifting problem, because you know he mm-hmm. was married to your cousin. You know, it's like everybody
right.
did, and there was no problem as to whether or not somebody would price gouge or take advantage of you, because again, he's married to your cousin. You got to see this guy at family picnics.
You
know,
right.
We didn't know that many people. Today we know a lot of people and they're out there. So out of the billion people on Facebook, and I'm sticking with Facebook because the number is big and people are more familiar with that, they can
mm-hmm.
they can find some affinity group in there that is something about what you're already an expert at. If it's, you know, if you are an expert at how to do, you know, income tax accounting, there are groups of people talking about that every day online someplace. And you find those people and you serve them and they become the leaders. If it's a more general consumer kind of thing, there are people looking for everything. They don't. One thing they don't type in is nobody Googles what is the meaning of life. They're always looking for, you know, self-help becomes things like how can I stop smoking? How can I make more money? How can I find a date? You know, and all those things are very, very active of people talking about it all day long, all the time. And so you go to where a group of those people are, and then you listen, and sooner or later somebody's going to have a question. So now I'm ready to switch over to Twitter. On Twitter,
the
difference is they started Twitter because they mm-hmm. were trying to make a podcast tool, okay, and it was failing miserably. Uh-huh. And these guys were smart. They'd done other things before. Blogger, that was the actual blogger site that Google bought years ago, was started by these mm-hmm. same guys. So some really mm-hmm. smart guys are sitting there, and they've got a team, I think it was seven or eight people, and they went out to a playground, and just sit there brainstorming on children's playground equipment. And one guy at the top of the slide said, hey, wouldn't it be a great idea if I could send a text to all of you at the same time? And so, you know, this was 10 years ago, and, text was happening, but they knew, everybody knew it was going to grow. And they said, well, yeah, that's pretty good. And they coded it up, and they made it so that it would fit with text messages. Text messages are 160 characters. They reserve 20 characters to address somebody, and then that left 140 characters, and it was for short things. I think one of the first tweets was one of the founders saying that, you know, he wanted to have a barbecue on Friday night, and everybody responded, I'm coming, I'm not coming, things like that. Very simple communication. And I would imagine at that point they were envisioning was going to stay more private, but the nature of it was like a party line. Everybody could get involved. So the magic of Twitter is it's not that much different than the other things, but when you send an email, you expect it to go to who you send it to. When you're posting on Facebook, you expect your friends to be able to see it. On Twitter, you expect anybody who wants to be able to find it because of the search engine function. And so what happens is you get you start following and paying attention to the people who are most likely to be your customers, or, promised this earlier, the people who are the gateway to the customers. So actually the people that are hiring people for speaking gigs, or other speakers, other people that have already been successful at what you're doing. And in this kind of an atmosphere, they're not all trying to outsell each other. I just have not seen this on social media where somebody says, hey, I saw so-and-so was speaking for you, I could do a better job, because it's in public. You got to be polite. And so they go like, you know, you might go in and say, I want the job too, but then that makes you look needy. On the other hand, if you find out a way to go and help somebody, and let's take you're a speaker and you want to get better known in your niche of what you're doing, whatever type it is, there's already 10 people you would love to have a business that works just like theirs. You find those 10 people on Twitter and you follow them. Now, not everybody's on Twitter, so this could be used in other ways. You can do the same thing with email and what their webpage and blog is, but Twitter's very easy to find who is there. You can do a search on keywords, whatever. You find those people, you talk to them. In my case, when I first got on and figured out that it was more than just a way to push my product, Guy Kawasaki was asking questions. Guy Kawasaki, big-time author, the guy that evangelized the Mac and helped Apple get off the ground, and, you know, written a lot of good books and gets paid well to do a speech, and I want to be more like Guy. And he asked a question on some piece of technology or what you thought about this, or maybe even, do you think we'll Twitter amount to anything? I don't remember what. I remember that, gosh, I have an opinion on this. I would like to answer this. And so I did. I then thought, well, speakers are somebody I'd like to know. I live in Las Vegas. There's a big event coming to town. There are 20 people speaking. Why don't I look them up and see if I can find them on Twitter and Facebook? And sure enough, a bunch of them were there. They happened to be in the tech-related field, and so they were more likely to have Twitter in 2007. And sure enough, they were listing the Twitter address, and all I had to do was click and find them, follow them. And at the time, I had about 50 followers, and these were in it, and I went out and saw what they were asking questions about, what I could answer, where I could jump into a conversation was always going on. Same techniques you do in networking anywhere, but here was a much faster way to reach a whole lot of them. And instead of just going and every time somebody said something about speaking, spamming them, I was actually reading whatever they were talking about and helping them. And I went to that event, didn't really meet anybody. You know, I was starting to get a little bit better at doing that. And, and I kept honing that till now. I go to an event and people that are giving the keynote will walk up to me and say, aren't you that guy that I just follow on Twitter? And I've made a connection before I ever get there. But back then I wasn't doing too well. And there was one person that I just thought, boy, this was a complete waste of time. Her name was Stephanie Agresta. And who she is and what she does, other than for purposes of telling the story and telling the truth, doesn't matter. She's in, I think, digital PR in New York. But anyway, everything she posted was like where the next party is, or where are you guys having lunch, or here's a picture of my breakfast. a lot less pictures back then, but it occasionally happened. And so I kind of like wrote it off and just said, well, you know, I didn't go to the trouble of not following. Then one day I opened up Twitter, and on my Twitter feed, on the website, you know, twitter.com, it said that, you know, Stephanie Agresta was asking whether a MacBook cover was going to be washable. And I go like, hey, I know how to answer that question. I used to own a company that did stuff like that. We sold covers and did repairs on computers and whatnot. I know how to get the answer. You Google it. So I took the three keywords that she used and put them into Google, and in 2 seconds I had an answer. It takes a lot longer to tell this story than what actually happened. And I put back, yes, answered her question, a URL, which fit. Before URLs got so many add-on characters and things to correct them, you didn't need a shortener. It all fit. And then I still had room in the 140 characters to say, did you know you could Google this? Which is what I used to say to people when I answered the questions by email back when I had the tech service company. And so there you go. Yes, your MacBook cover is washable. Well, done with that. Literally did not even check that it was Stephanie Agresta. It was just somebody asking a question. I knew the answer, and I'm a nice person, and it took 15 seconds of my time. 2 seconds later, she answers back and says, well, of course, as in she knew how to Google it. She says, of course, but this was more fun. And as I recall, I literally slapped my head at that time and going, this is it. I'm actually helping another human being. It's costing me next to nothing, a couple of seconds of my time, and maybe she'll remember this. I've checked this out. Years later, I met her. She did remember it happening. She didn't remember me. That's okay. I couldn't say Agresta right back then. I just knew Stephanie A. something had done this, and I had been telling the story for a while. And so we met up, and the next year we ended up getting on a panel together. And I reminded her of the story. She said, well, you've got to tell that story to everybody, of course, because it makes her look good. Right. And I've been telling it ever since with her blessing, because that's what when I got what Twitter was all about, answering people's questions. So here's what you do. If you want to go on Twitter and you have an account, don't read the entire feed. You can't. If you're following more than 50 people, there's no way you'll ever read everything that gets posted. But go ahead and follow some people. There's some tools that make it so you can follow individuals or small groups of individuals better. But and they're easy enough to find, so I'll let somebody else teach you that. And what I'm going to teach you to use is the search function. So everything I'm talking about can be done right on Twitter.com with any account. With zero followers or a million followers makes no difference. You go to the search bar in Twitter and you type in something. And I'm going to use one that I doubt anybody is using as their speaking topic or they care about in their business, and that's sushi restaurants in Cincinnati. If I want to know whether or not there are sushi restaurants in Cincinnati, I'll type the word sushi, then a space, then the word Cincinnati. So far, just like any other search, then a space, and then a question mark. And all I will get is people who are asking questions about sushi in Cincinnati. I use that because it's a fairly obscure thing for most of us. I've never been to Cincinnati. I don't like sushi, but I can do that search. And the last time I checked it, tweets within the past couple of days filled my screen, and all of them with the questions. And so, and if that doesn't work for your keywords, then go ahead and substitute and keep trying, because you can try 10 of them in 5 minutes, and you'll find something where somebody's asking a question. And, in fact, what you're really looking for is what is the question when you give a really good speech and it's over with and you covered the subject thoroughly, and then somebody walks up to the stage and says, you know, my situation is a little different, and then they ask you the question you've heard a thousand times before. That's the question you want to be answering. And, you know, rather than do what I used to do, was get upset, like, didn't you listen to my speech? So I answer that question. And sushi restaurants in Cincinnati, I could go start a conversation right now with somebody that cared about sushi restaurants in Cincinnati. You got to look a little bit, because a lot of it's like reading through classified ads. You got to make sure that you're not going to, you know, talk to somebody who's trying to sell his sushi deal at his restaurant in Cincinnati. But you'll find somebody that will be asking, where's a good place to get sushi in Cincinnati or something like that. And you could start it just like I did with Stephanie Agresta. you could start a conversation from there. Now, you might do that 40 times before anybody takes you up on it, but your cost in that is going to be a few minutes of your time. And then one might say, well, as a matter of fact, I really like what you're doing. And what happens is it's not about giving these people the answers and developing a relationship with them. That's nice. But the gravy, the icing on the cake, if you will, the good part of this is that everybody who reads your Twitter feed will see that you're a nice person that does that sort of thing. Now, this could be adapted. If you're already got a good following, then you might be asking a question yourself, like, what do you like to eat on Tuesdays only? Or what's your favorite color of M&M? Or something like that, that's general or very specific. If you talk about, tax preparation software, as we said before, then you could say, what's your biggest challenge in preparing taxes? You can still get into your topic, but the truth is it's usually better to get a little bit outside of what you would normally be trying to sell somebody and help people who are in that general marketplace about the same thing. Now, I've used Twitter to explain this, but the same thing happens on Facebook where there are groups of people already together talking about whatever. And the one thing they hate is somebody to come in to make a sales pitch. I call that a drive-by post where you find out that, for instance, I'm launching a new podcast later this month. I could go out to all of the podcast groups that I belong to, and even though I've even participated in, but especially if I hadn't participated, I go in and say, I've got a new podcast. Give it a listen. Well, guess what? Some of those groups, especially groups on LinkedIn, are just full of people saying, well, I've got a new book. I've got a new whatever, I've got a home study course on how to use LinkedIn. And they're just, it's flooded with like the kind of spam you'd get in classified ads or a bulletin board because it's essentially free and nobody cares. On the other hand, if you're answering questions, you'll stand out like a sore thumb. The person that asked the question, I asked this to 10,000 people. I got two responses, and yours was polite and nice and told me. The other person told me, go look it up on Google.
And if
you just do that over and over again, people are going to know you're the go-to guy for whatever it is you want to be known as the expert in. And, you don't go too far off of what your topic is. And maybe you don't post things about sushi in Cincinnati. I'm enough of a generalist that I do that. I wouldn't suggest anybody else do that, but hard to come up with a specialty without, guessing. And so rather than getting near your niche and not quite right or not knowing your niche, it's easier for me to talk about sushi in Cincinnati.
And then it sounds like it may. Yeah, it helped a lot. It sounds like a great way to also narrow down your niche when you start to realize what questions you're really answering well or what questions are even being asked out there. Then you can start to narrow down your niche into something that is being asked about, that is
saleable,
marketable.
And you're not going to wear it out. It used to be that if you had, let's say somebody gave you a directory of the 500 people that hire speakers and you had to do a pitch to each one of them and hopefully, land enough of those that you can make a living. But that's tough. You've got to let them all know what you're doing. You've got to push your message. Today, it's not push. Those people and a lot more and all their audiences are online. And so you don't need to worry about wearing it out because you could that question that you answered, it was the name of your speech, you answered it and there were 27 slides on it in your speech. You told great stories, told wonderful jokes, made them laugh, made them cry, and then put a great call to action at the end, and everybody was ready to go stomping off and do it. And still, you're going to have somebody come up at the end of the speech and say, my situation is different, and ask you the same question that you've been answering all day. And so don't worry about wearing out your message. Just keep answering the same dumb question. I found I got into this right after closing down my retail store, and I found by far the number one question we got when somebody called was, what are your hours and how do I get there? And I remember how annoying that used to be because I wanted to do automation. We had a website. I put up an FAQ page. I taught all my staff what to do, so I never had to do that. I tried a phone system so that, a recording would tell them where it was. Today, I wouldn't do it that way at all. In a small business, and you can't do that. This is harder to scale, but it would. But let's just talk about in my small business, I had, 20 employees and, we had thousands of customers, but not all in one day. And then somebody calls up and says, where it is. That's a buying signal. They want to drive to my location. I want to find out where you're coming from. Oh, it's going to take you about 35 minutes to get here. We were going to close in 15. I'll tell you what, if you tell me for sure you're coming, I'll stay here late. And that guy's never going to forget that you did that for him. And I never thought of doing things like that back then because I was thinking, how can I get out of the store and close it? As anybody with that needs to, lock the doors and go home. Well, and I think we did a better job of that than most, but still, that was my focus. How can I, maybe that customer isn't worth getting. The money that is lost in all businesses by people who almost did business with you is immense. I'd say any business there is could double and triple. One famous example of that is at one point, Burger King hired a marketing director, vice president of marketing. They didn't call them CMOs back then, who had been working for McDonald's. And he went into a meeting where they were discussing the processes they were using to find new places to put Burger King. This is, decades ago when they were both expanding nationwide. And the guy said, you idiots, stop wasting all your time doing this research. Tell you what to do. Find every place that's a McDonald's and open up across the street. Your Charbroil supposedly a little bit better than McDonald's. And every McDonald's restaurant is estimated to have twice the market of what they're getting. And so, when next time you're driving down a freeway between cities and you see a little stop in the middle of nowhere where there's a McDonald's and a Burger King and maybe Wendy's and Taco Bell and other chains have come in since then. But, those were all started by people following the McDonald's around. McDonald's would do the research, figure out how many the market could support, and they just couldn't open up enough locations. Now, later, Subway and Starbucks have taken to where they have smaller stores and open a lot more of them. But back in the day, that's what they did. They found out where the people were. There was more demand they could possibly satisfy. There are more places to speak than I know. I've been to enough things with enough bad speakers. There are plenty of places that want a speaker for whatever deal, whether it's free or you have to, sell something off the leads or you're getting paid a keynotes. There's always more places that just go wanting or hire a less effective speaker, and it's because they don't know about it. So if you're going to serve that market, you've got to be out there talking to the people who are going to be saying, I want this one. People that are already looking for your niche. And then enough of them are going to resonate, it's okay. With a billion people on Facebook, it's really hard to say there's not enough market.
Got it. Well, we've got about 20 minutes left, and here's what I'd like to do. First, I want to kind of review what you've said just so we can anchor it in with our listeners and they understand the process. And then I want to talk about the future of the Internet and where it's going and how we can be ahead of that curve as the technology progresses. So, first of all, let me make sure
I love the future. I intend to spend the rest of my life there.
Good. Let me see if I can boil this down, what you just talked about. Basically, the strategy is to engage people who are in your niche or around your niche, find out where the conversations are and what the questions are, and specifically what the questions that you can answer as a new speaker are, and start answering those questions and engaging those questions and answering people's question and helping other people and adding value. It sounds like that's the strategy, and as you do
well,
that,
and to sum it up, if that's not getting you enough, if that's not getting enough, then go give more. The more you give, the higher value you have, and people are going to be attracted to you. But if you push your message, if you push your message, the more you push, the more desperate you're going to look, and you lower your value. You look like a commodity. You don't want to be the girl at the dance who's sitting in the corner, who's that's one problem. The other one is the kind of pretty girl that's going up to all the guys and saying, "Are you going to ask me to dance?" No, you don't want to be that person. You want to be the person that's looking so good that everybody wants to come and meet you.
Right. Got it. Okay. Great. And you can do that on Twitter, same way you can do it on Facebook or
Yeah.
YouTube or
any
social media.
It's no longer about the platforms. Everybody is this wired that no matter where you go, there are groups of people and there's more people wanting to buy than there are to want to sell. Well, I ask you, would you rather have a salesman come by to sell you, or would you rather go shopping and buy what you want?
You got it.
By the way,
got
it's the same transaction. Everybody loves to shop. They don't like to be sold.
Well, one thing I know about Warren Whitlock is that he considers himself a futurist, and many people haven't heard that term, but it's exactly what you think it is as far as understanding the future and kind of seeing the trends and understanding where those trends are leading to. So, Warren, let's talk about the trends in social media. What's coming up that we should expect, and how can we put ourselves in front of that wave or in front of that curve and be the leaders as it progresses?
It's excellent questions. What I think about all day long is that we've got to a point where you've got billions of people online. We still have a real issue that there are a lot of people that aren't online. There's about 4 billion plus, I can't remember the last number I saw. I saw a solid 4 billion that have a phone of some sort and have some connection. But that's probably, you know, what we would call an old, not even flip phone, the brick ones from back then. It's got a number keypad, and that's about it. That is revolutionizing business and people's life in some part of the world. They can do SMS, and as soon as they're able, they're going to want to do smartphones and better connections and things like that. And so that's about half of the people that are already connected. And then there's still a couple of billion that aren't connected at all. So 2 to 3 billion have no connection. So that market is just going to continue to grow there. It's not going to continue to grow with the number of people that use it in the United States. In the United States, we have, we have a pretty good penetration. Over half of the market has a smartphone. It's more mobile. People expect to be able to reach anything they want. And that trend's going to continue, but not by the leaps and bounds it has in the last 5 years. But what's going to happen is people are going to find out more things to do with that computer in your pocket. Because right now, the average person with a smartphone has a handful of applications on it, and there are a lot of people that buy a smartphone and don't do anything except for make phone calls, maybe send text, and, you know, things you could do with any phone, or even email you could do with just about any phone. But the apps that really make a difference in our life begin to be things that, you know, is very particular to what we want and more of a niche. So there's just still a lot of growth in mobile going on, and we still need to conquer where if I'm in a certain location, my phone knows that and gives me an answer based on that location. My search on Google is going to be different if I'm in my house on my smartphone than if I'm at a shopping mall with a smartphone or if I'm at my desktop. It already is, but that's going to become, you know, more unique and more controllable by us. And so with those kind of trends going on, you know that the social is just more and more people talking in more and more places, and you need to find the niche. You used to be able to say, well, you know, I'm not into that internet stuff. But now if you're connected, unless, you know, what you want to do is talk to people that aren't connected, if you like talking in, you know, senior centers, that, you know, you might be able to have a little bit of time left. And there's plenty of stuff to do. There's still people who swear by radiators and vinyl records and, even buggy whips. But for the most part, the world is more and more like that. The millennials, which often are called just the Gen Y, born 1980 to 2000, is actually more of a psychographic term for those of us that think about doing digital first, are coming up like crazy. And there's that means that if I have a choice, I'd rather do something on an app on my phone rather than have to go find a computer, log in, and do it that way, rather than go to a store and do something. We were just in a discussion here. I'm in, you know, at the home office, and I had a break, and so I went to talk to the wife. We're having to change TV programming providers. And, oh, what a discussion that became. You know, it's such a mess. What are we going to do? And I said, well, you know, those guys we avoid every time we go to Costco, there's always two or three people there. They'll give you the best deal if you want a satellite dish. And I was recommending against that. But, you know, if you wanted a satellite dish, you could do that. I'm talking to you on a phone I bought at one of those kiosks in Costco. So So, you know, I said, that's something to do. And my wife's reaction was like, why would I ever want to do that? You know, I'm interpreting the look on her face. I want to go on Amazon, push a button. I want it to arrive at the house. I don't want to think about it. And, okay, that's what we got to do. And that's becoming more and more so as we go more into digital and automation. So, you know, and it's going to leave the people that don't do it in the dust, basically, because this, you know, it digital first. Even as I go to talk to, you know, I just did a thing called transitional CMO where everybody there was a big Fortune 500 or just below that company selling something, and there were the CMOs from that. And these people are somewhat isolated for different reasons because, you know, they're in their 50s and they spent the last 20 years climbing the corporate ladder. And so I thought, well, gosh, they won't be in touch. Well, all of them had smartphones. All of them did something like that. They all had digital programs already. But the new term I kept hearing over and over again is digital first, digital marketing, as if all of the stuff we've done in the last 20 years for digital hadn't really caught them. They're looking at, now we really need a strategy, and they're calling it omnichannel, where everything from, you know, the easiest to tell about this is you go to a store and you buy something, or you go online and buy something and then you want to take it back to the store. That kind of thing is just going to happen in the future. Right now, it's a big hassle with some chains. And that's because when they went online, they decided online was a separate silo, a separate group selling something. In some cases, they even made them separate companies, so they had a different legal structure. And a lot of reasons they did that, but, you know, it doesn't matter now because they did that, and now they're looking at the average person just wants something when they want it, where they want it, delivered on time. Same thing we're looking at TV. I want to be able to watch a show. That's our current crisis, you know, that we found a new service that we're all ready to sign up for, and it didn't have a DVR or any way for us to watch something on demand. And at my house, that's just like, you know, that's a non-starter. I'm not going to plan my life about when a TV show is on. I want to watch something. I expect it to come on my screen and entertain me. And so with the world wanting those kind of things, everything from gaming to merchandise delivery to media, people expect that. I don't see that we're going to a place where we're not going to have meetings and need speakers. But what happens when you do that is a different kind of thing. I want to have a relationship where if somebody changes my life because I sent in a speech, I want 10, 20 years from now to know that guy's still around and still consistent with what he was saying. Also, the other thing that's happening is the time that we spend working for the same company is a lot shorter. So I don't want to go and establish a relationship that's going to take 3 years, get somebody to really get the culture of where I'm working. And so you've got to be able to allow for people to come in, come out, do a project, do some good, basically the way we all make our money. But, you know, employees will be doing that in the future, and then we'll maybe even cease to call them employees. So every person is a president of U Inc. and, you know, is working out for themselves, and we want to cater to those people, which means they want it when they want it. I don't care how fast my broadband is. I always want it to be a little bit faster. The downloads always take too long. It doesn't matter if I get a movie in 3 seconds. I want it to be a movie in 2 seconds or not even notice it. And everything becomes like that. With 3D printers, we're going to be able to get that in our home. So we're expecting that, you know, anything I want, wherever I want it, whenever I want it, is taken care of. Now it's a matter of building communities and creating experiences. And so a lot of what we're calling social media now, which I prefer to think of as social media tools. They're not media, even though you can run ads on them, buy ads, and they're not really fully social. They're mostly social compared to anything else we have online. But that component's going to be just in everything we do. So if you have a bad experience with a vendor, employer, retail store, anything that you do, or even a buyer, that I'm working with a startup right now that is putting in a type of transaction system that eliminates chargebacks and allows you, you know, because the person has to be satisfied. And if there's somebody who regularly doesn't, you know, regularly returns everything they buy, the system will be a way to kick that person out. And so we're going to really, trust is going to be much more important in everything that we do. And so you need to be looking for ways to do that and focus what you're already talking about to include that.
Right, right. And, you know, you and I talked a little bit about this and the future and how we're going away from the employee-type structure and more toward the self-employed type structure where each person is their own, like you, Inc., you had just mentioned. And so the more that people can get used to working from a home environment, the better off they are, the more prepared they are going to be for, you know, for lack of a better word, the new economy that's going to start to emerge here. And I think a lot of people are already doing that, but there's several people still, you know, employees that will eventually wind up breaking away because it'll be more cost effective for corporations to not pay their benefits and all that other stuff we talk about.
Well, yeah, you've got to think that the future comes when we put in automation. What are the companies that are disrupting and becoming the companies of the future? Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Google. These are companies that have a far less employee count to get more done, more sales per employee. And so in the old economy, they're looking like they're just, you know, paid employees, sending stuff overseas or whatever. In the future, when we figure out that some way that, you know, all of this great technology, I'm a capitalist first and foremost, and we get to a point where we have an abundance of everything, let's say free electricity is one that's been talked about. If you put in a plant and it literally costs nothing to generate the electricity because of using whether or not it's nuclear or solar or what, you know, or, geez, I've seen some things with the temperature changes 100 feet down in the ocean and that thermal dynamic range can generate electricity, all sorts of things like that. And then we have the electricity to take care of water. Desalinization ends all droughts in California and around the world. The biggest problem we have with food is we produce enough food, but it doesn't get to all the people that need it. We start solving problems like that. More and more, it's going to be about that people have the free time. They're not depending on working to eat. We get rid of that myth that you have to work, you have to have a job to eat. I think everybody listening here knows that, you know, you can do real fine, just fine without having a job and a designated plan that you got with a certificate you earned at school. We know better than that. I've never had a job like that. And I'm doing okay. I haven't starved to death yet. I don't need a big company to take care of me. I don't need the government to take care of me. But at some point, we ought to make sure we don't lose those people. And so a lot of, like, talking about that, helping with that, re-educating people that, you know, traditional education, as we know it, is not the best way to learn something. But all the education, the learning has to be there. We have to teach people to, you know, everything from speak a common language to be able to get along with each other, and then what to do when the job doesn't require you to sit at the same place for 8 to 12 hours a day. You know, I don't think we're all going to just watch more TV and we're not going to go to the completely esoteric and write better poems. And I just read where we're not that far off of a computer will be able to write a better poem or produce better music than us. And so if we're going that, if that's the direction the world's going, rather than fighting that trend, like you commented before about, you know, turning it around and using it for your advantage. And I think it means that there's a lot more places where people need education, adult education in the non-traditional, you know, university government controlled situation. In my lifetime, it's just grown, you know, thousands of percent. And I don't see that slowing down. It won't be whatever study course or whatever online thing you thought you said. We're still inventing what those things are. And so when I find that there's a great quote, Margaret Mead, I can't remember who said this. There's something about the miracles happen when you can get a small group of dedicated people together with the same cause. And I think that's happening. I'm now participating in blab.im. And it is limiting to 4 people on video. Any number of people can come and watch. There have to be other versions of this kind of thing that are private and public or whatever. Just like Facebook evolved where there's some groups that, you know, There's some groups you've never heard of, and there's a secret group where there's, you know, 300 people talking to each other, and they all, because they bought the right course or worked at the right company or, you know, attended the right lecture or whatever it is. And those kind of communities are helping each other all the time. And what I see with Blab is it's going to be an immense ability to hold a mastermind. So just people who listen to your podcast and like what you teach, what you share here, are going to say, well, we could get together. We could carry this on. So when you give a speech, people are going to be saying, well, how can I stay in touch with you, rather than what trick can you use to collect their email address? You'll really be able to go after the people that really want to do more with you. In my line of work, I'm able to pick up a consulting gig. Let's say it's a six-figure consulting gig. I don't need to sell 10 of those a day. No way I could do that much consulting. And so what I find is I go out and do an awful lot of stuff to keep the relationships going, so that when one friend tells me about somebody that needs some help and can I answer a question for them, I don't think they have any budget, and I go over there and help them out and then land a large contract out of it. It'll be fine. I don't have to worry about, is that something that I cultivated as a way to do that? It just happens because it becomes known that I know certain things and I can help. In that case, the one story I'm thinking about, it was being able to read Google Analytics. And in 10 minutes, I was able to help them where several pros had not been able to find it, and they were actually doing damage every day. We turned them around and made them, you know, much more than they ever paid me back in a week. And it was because I knew enough to go in and look at the right thing. It wasn't because I put in the right number of hours or had the right certificate or took a course from Google. It was because I was, you know, somebody able to look at it and make a difference. So, and that's why I do things like this. I give them my time freely. I know that somewhere out there, somebody is resonating with somebody, you know, often enough to keep me fat and happy. And, you know, they're going to say, hey, could you take a look at this? Could you help us with this? And I see that happening a lot more. It's because we can identify it so much better. Used to be somebody walked into my store, I don't know who they are or where they came from. We would try to ask, well, did you see our ad on TV? But, you know, we just didn't really know. Today, digital tracks so well, and the relationships, the social graph. We're just getting started with what the social graph does. Right now it's, can we target ads right? In the future it's going to be, can we get the right community together to get something done and make the world a better place?
Right. Well, Warren, thank you so much for this information. Our community certainly thanks you. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, add value to as many conversations as you can. And, yes, get your branding done. Yes, get your blog set up and have a platform for people to follow you. But once you do, make sure you're out there conversing, looking for those conversations where you can add value and start to answer people's questions and help them out.
Wouldn't it be nice if every day you woke up and said, how can I help more people today? And didn't have to worry about, I wonder if I'll get that contract. And it can get to that.
Right.
I can't say that I've mastered that and I do all the same things that we're talking about people doing. I know because I've been through it. Thinking, where can I get the next gig? But it's not always going to be like that if you go out and form communities. It's a whole lot easier now for me than it used to be when I was pushing.
Right.
And a lot more fun.
Well, thank you, Warren Whitlock, for being on our show. This is Bob Dietrich with The Advantage. And stay tuned next time. We will be working with Warren Whitlock when we talk on Blab next week. So look for that on Blab. That's blab.com. And, Warren, thank you once again.
Blab.im.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you for that correction. And thank you for listening to our show. Until we meet again next time, take care and have a great weekend.